Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crummery. Thank you for tuning in. A privately run childcare program is set to offer all-day care for school-aged children in several Juneau schools this summer. Once the school year ends, Auklake Rowley will continue to operate from May 26th to August 21st. Auklake Preschool runs Auklake Rowley as an after-school childcare program at Auk Bay Elementary School, Sit E.T. Shinnok Glacier Valley Elementary School, and Harborview Elementary School. Auklake Preschool took over operating Rowley after the district ended the program last year due to staffing issues. The provider now plans to continue operation during the summer, as the school district used to. Derek Swanson is the owner. He grew up attending and working for Rowley when the school district ran it. He says it's important to him to provide this type of childcare to the community.
If you don't have a place, a safe place to put your kids, then your life kind of just revolves around making deals, trying to figure out what to do with them, and that puts your career on hold, that puts all your plans on hold. So we'd like to be able to be a good, reliable place, and then a place kids look forward to.
Swanson says he plans to operate Summer Rowley every weekday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. While several Juneau organizations offer summer camps for school-age children, most do not offer all-day care. Rowley's monthly rate will be $1,000 per child over the summer. It will return to its current after-school rate of just under $670 when the school year begins again. The district-run program used to allow families to sign up for specific weeks during summer. Auklake Rowley will have less flexibility, but Swanson says they're willing to offer prorated rates on a case-by-case basis.
We'd be willing to make deals with individual families over individual cases, and we're still just trying to figure out what would be a fair price that would keep the business soluble, but that wouldn't be too much of a burden on our families.
Swanson says he also plans to expand the number of spaces this summer to at least 50 at each school. Right now, the after-school program accommodates around 60 children total at the three school sites. Auklake Rowley is currently unlicensed, preventing families with specific child care vouchers from using them. But Swanson aims to get every site licensed by summer, which would allow voucher use. Swanson says sign up for Summer Rowley is currently open on the Auklake Preschool website. Since Juneau broke its official winter snowfall record at the airport on Monday, many people have asked, will the melting snowpack influence the next glacial outburst flood expected in the Mendenhall Valley this summer? KTOO's Alex Solomon talked to the scientists with the answer.
The short answer is no. Local scientists say this winter's snowfall won't really have much, if any, influence on Juneau's next glacial outburst flood. Let's explain. First, there's an important distinction between snowfall, which is added up on a daily basis, and snowpack, the layers that stack up and compress over the whole winter. The capital city broke its snowfall record at the Juneau International Airport with a little more than 200 inches on March 23rd. But Aaron Jacobs, a hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau, says the snowpack and the water that it'll melt down to is pretty close to average.
The amount of water that's in the snowpack is about near normal. Nothing very extraordinary, not very high.
That's according to snowpack data tracked by the U.S. Natural Resources Conservation Service at two stations near Juneau. Aaron Hood is a glacial outburst flood expert at the University of Alaska Southeast. He says the snowpack isn't deeper because there was a long warm-up in the middle of winter when a lot of it melted.
There's the first sort of snowpocalypse and then this melt-out period and then the second snowpocalypse.
But more importantly, Hood says Juneau's snowpack is completely unrelated to the conditions that control the size of glacial outburst floods, unlike spring floods in parts of the western U.S. Suicide Basin is the lake beside Mendenhall Glacier that produces Juneau's annual glacial outburst flood when it fills up and then bursts through the ice, releasing around 16 billion gallons of water all at once into the suburban Mendenhall Valley below. Hood says heavy summer rainfall contributes the most to how quickly Suicide Basin fills up, since it both adds water directly and rapidly melts ice. But he says in a year where there is a particularly large snowpack to melt, the basin might fill a bit sooner.
Maybe instead of early August, we could fill it by, say, the third week of July. Would that influence how big the flood was? No. What influences how big the flood is the volume of the basin when it's full and how fast the water is released.
And he says those two variables have nothing to do with how quickly the basin fills. So where are we at with the basin volume and how fast the floodwaters burst out, which actually control the size of the flood? Scientists don't know yet. Hood says that in the winter, glacial ice flow rates are slow, and massive icebergs aren't calving into Suicide Basin.
I don't think there's a lot of activity over winter in terms of the basin volume changing substantially. I wouldn't expect that.
He says his team plans to do drone surveys of Suicide Basin in May and June that will allow them to update the estimated volume of water it can hold. And as for how fast the water bursts from the basin and rushes through the Mendenhall River, scientists can't measure that until the flood is underway. The size of the flood has consistently grown over the last 3 years. But even if the next flood is the biggest one yet, this winter's snow wouldn't be why. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And one person died on Sunday in a major avalanche near Haines Pass, just across the border in British Columbia. Late March is typically prime time for recreation in the backcountry hotspot, but experts are warning about unstable snow conditions in the area that likely contributed to the recent tragedy. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, forecasters anticipate conditions won't improve anytime soon.
The victim was traveling with a group of five skiers in the Rainy Hollow area just over the Canadian border from Haines. Three skiers made their way down the slope before the fourth triggered an avalanche, which then triggered a much deeper, larger one. Zoe Ryan is a public forecaster with Avalanche Canada, a nonprofit based in British Columbia.
Even a small avalanche can be enough to create enough force that it impacts deeper layers than just the weight of a skier or a snowmobiler might impact the snow.
The slide completely buried one person, who died, according to an incident report by Avalanche Canada. The rest of the group was unharmed and removed the victim from the snow. Canadian police coordinated with Atlin Search and Rescue to retrieve the group via helicopter, according to a news release. Forecasters, including Ryan, say the tragedy is a reflection of a more precarious snowpack in the region than is typical for late March, and are urging people to act accordingly.
People are really keen to get after it, and most people heading out in the backcountry in that area, they're heading out with the expectation that we're in a spring settled snowpack, but it's just not the case this year.
Conditions have been unstable in other parts of Alaska, too, including near Girdwood and Turnagain Pass, according to the Friends of Chugach Avalanche Center. An incident report published over the weekend says a recent avalanche in that area caught, carried, and injured a skier. In the Haines area, the instability stems from a few key factors. Jeff Moskowitz is the director of the Haines Avalanche Center. Perhaps the most important one, he says, is...
There's a unique layer that has formed in the snowpack, and it's been referred to as the love layer or the Valentine's layer.
He's referring to a freezing fog event in mid-February that created a thick, crusty layer of snow throughout much of the area. Moskowitz says it's impossible to know for certain where exactly the layer is, but...
We know that it's widespread and it's susceptible to human triggering.
Extreme cold temperatures in the time since have weakened the snow below and above that crusty layer, creating instability. That's resulted in a unique and dangerous setup, Moskowitz says.
In this case, with, you know, weak, soft, sugary layers underneath, it might become harder and harder to trigger an avalanche, but if you do, it's going to have big consequences.
Both Moskowitz and Ryan emphasized that this winter has been atypical, with extremely cold temperatures leading to a weaker snowpack. That means Haines and the Yukon really still have a riskier winter snowpack as opposed to a spring one, and that's not expected to change anytime soon.
Realistically, we're going to be dealing with this persistent slab problem, likely until we get a really significant warm-up this spring.
Until then, forecasters are advising people to be extremely cautious and to stay out of avalanche terrain. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And a Rainbow Pride Raven's Tail robe, woven by dozens of mentors and youth, was danced for the first time this week in Juneau. Dancers debuted the robe on the court during the gold medal basketball tournament, which brings together teams and fans from Alaska Native communities across Southeast Alaska. At the gold medal basketball tournament, as the squeaks of players' shoes on the gym floor fade, the Eagle Raven dance group file out onto the court. Through the mostly red, black, and blue regalia, flashes of rainbow peek through. Group leader Jackie Peta announces the Weaving Our Pride robes for their debut as a pair.
Tonight we're going to feature two robes that are dancing for the first time together.
The Chilkat robe was finished in 2024 under the guidance of Master Weaver Lily Hope and other weaving mentors, but this was the first time the Raven's Tail robe was danced. Its journey to gold medal started at the Zach Gordon Youth Center, where over the course of 2 years, weaving mentors and curious youth wove the robe stitch by stitch, row by row. It transformed from wool into hand-spun yarn into a full-sized robe. Like its older Chilkat sibling, the Raven's Tail robe was made from rainbow, hand-spun yarn. The colors are mixed with black thread, and white squares sit on top of the design. Black and white zigzag patterns border the robe. Milena Meyer was one of several weavers who mentored the project, which often looked like working on the project alone until someone at the center wanted to participate. She says youth would be interested in what they were doing, but too shy to take the yarn into their own hands.
There's been a couple youth that like to hang out in the back room with us while we are weaving, but we couldn't really get them to come in and weave, to sit down and stuff, until one day of just, you know, needing to wind up some balls of yarn or something and sitting down and saying, hey, if you're going to be in here, you need to do this, and then they start weaving on it later.
Nietzsche Janegut Yech Lane Reinhardt is a weaver, and he also mentored the program through both projects. He says dozens of young people participated, contributing just a couple of stitches to whole rows of weaving.
I think that that's what's beautiful about the Raven's Tail robe, the Yehu robe, is that it's just, you can see the youth's hands in it in a way that is very, very present. And I think that that's kind of what, you know, makes it beautiful, is that you can really see that in the way that the stitches lie.
And all that teamwork doesn't just make the robe more beautiful, he says. It's also making future weavers.
I think just even that early exposure to, you know, the art form, it's like, well, you know, even if it's 10 years down the line or 5 years, whatever it may be, or tomorrow, like, you know, they'll have that in their hands, like, already.
And for Reinhardt, the pride element of the project is personal.
It's just sort of that reaffirmation that we've always been here. There's historical documentation of, you know, LGBTQ weavers in our community. So, you know, we've always been doing this work, and it's kind of good to see it come out in such a public way.
Chris Coulson is now 20 years old, but they spent countless hours weaving on both robes since they were 17. They got the chance to dance with the Chilkat robe that was finished in 2024.
I actually danced it, like, right after it was cut off the loom.
Coulson says that they got pretty comfortable with the Raven's Tail style. They have their own loom at home, and now they want to start taking on their own projects. They say the robes turned out beautifully.
I just hope that people, you know, the youth really enjoy, you know, dancing them, and hope it lasts a long time.
Coulson had the honor of wearing the Raven's Tail robe out of the center for the first time and delivering it to the court at Juno Douglas High School, Yeda'at Katle. Now the robe is a part of the community. In Juno, I'm Yvonne Crumery. This is KTOO.